My name is Max.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And you are awaited.
You Are Awaited is a Mad Max Fury Road podcast where Yuri Lowenthal and Travis Sintel remember to turn their cell phones off before they
record
the
episode. No, they don't.
4 minutes at a time of Mad Max.
The text was from you. The text was coming from inside the man cave.
This is terrible. You'd think by 40x weeks into this, we would have this down to a science.
You literally...
I texted you.
You ruined it
well,
for everyone.
Well, here's what happens, guys. In lieu of an intro, I'll just tell you that when we finish our four-minute segment, sometimes Yuri takes the photograph of the screen where we end on his own phone. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I take the photo and text it to him.
And like a boss, you texted me right away so I would have it.
I will say, this is interesting to no one but us. Welcome to Mad Max
Fury Road Podcast.
Let me give you a little bit of business up top here.
We have business?
Yeah, a little bit. We had, most weeks now, we've had some listener engagement. We've had some business to attend to.
We've had a lot of people lately engaging, and thank you.
It's been great. It's been great. So I think we have developed a new segment of the show, which is business. We'll do some business at the top of the episode.
Is the business to show the picture of the cat tattoo?
You know what? I'm making the executive decision that I will, when we get through the film.
Okay.
So not the attended episodes, we have some ideas for that, but when the action of the film concludes, I will release the photograph of myself as a cat on a man's back to all the listeners. Although we did not get 10, I think we got 8.
By then we could get 10.
So two more, just to make me feel better about my own decision.
Just for me. Just ask for it.
That is not the business I wanted to attend to.
I considered a victory. Go ahead with your business.
Yeah, that is a victory, and I'm glad you brought it up. The business is this. We had a user complaint.
We had a complaint?
Yes.
Awesome! Real podcasts get complaints.
I know. I think we're a real podcast now. And it's a complaint based around a missed opportunity. And it's one that we have, I think, danced around.
Okay.
But it's one that we've never fully leaned into. And I think it's high time we ought to do it.
Great.
My friend Kaylin Egan, your friend Kaylin Egan.
Is the complainant?
Past guest of the show.
Son of a bitch.
Kaylin Egan said, let me get this straight. You do a podcast about a movie called Fury Road with a guy named Yuri, and you've never leaned into that as a thing. He's like, you don't call it Yuri Road or Fury Lowenthal? And I was like, we haven't really done that before.
We haven't done that.
He's like, that feels like a really egregiously poor decision on your part, and I just want to lodge an official complaint. So, complaint lodged. This is now called Mad Max Yuri Road.
Yuri Road.
That's the way it's going to be the rest of the podcast.
But then it's but then it has to be like Mad Travis Yuri Road or something like Travis Max Yuri Road.
But do you see why it's not that?
Because I'm the crazy one?
Well, no, because your name is Yuri.
Okay, yeah.
And the movie is called Fury Road.
Full disclosure, yeah. I have hashtagged certain tweets about Mad Max Fury Road with F-Y-U-R-I Road.
Fury, yes.
Fury. Yuri Road. I just don't know if they were in regards to this podcast.
I also don't want to insinuate that we haven't ever talked about that or made that joke.
Right.
But I do think...
I love it. Don't get me wrong.
No, same.
It's one of my favorite things.
I just don't think we leaned into it as hard as we should have is the complaint. Okay. Not that we didn't come up with it or mention it, but that we didn't really make a big thing of it. Because it does feel like you are especially primed to be one of the hosts of this podcast, given your name.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say that and levy that complaint.
Kaylin, I'm sorry.
Of Kaylin, yeah. Well, you owe him an apology.
But we will, okay, when I see him, I will do that. In the meantime, we will try to repeat that as much as possible from now to the end of the podcast.
So You Are Awaited is a Mad Max
Yuri Road podcast.
Yuri Road podcast where... Travis Sintel and Fury Lowenthal.
Yes.
See what I've done there? I've switched it all around.
I love it.
Watch 4 minutes at a time of the film Mad Max.
Yuri Road.
Thank you. And we discuss it. That's it. That's the whole podcast. We sit through it. I don't imagine by this point in the podcast we have new listeners joining us. It would be a strange thing to tune into, although I hope I'm wrong about that.
I hope you're wrong.
So if you're joining us for the first time, welcome. We're excited to have you.
You've got so much to look forward to that's already happened.
You can go back and listen to all of the joyful bounty of intellectual goodness we've bestowed upon you, a veritable cornucopia of film analysis.
I feel like somehow my name has been redeemed from all the times when I was a kid that other kids would come up to me and go, urinal, urine.
Well, it's pretty clever.
It's really, I mean, it's clever the first time, but every single person who came up to me and said that thought that they were the first person to come up with
it. I think there's this rule about talking to people. If they have a name that feels like an obvious, right, don't ever talk to people. But if it's a joke you feel they've heard before, don't make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gentlemen who are looking to meet women, also a good rule.
Yeah, don't do that.
If she has an obvious physical characteristic you think most people comment on, don't do that. Yeah. If she's got a weird name, don't do that.
Yeah.
Just don't be that guy.
Yeah.
When you guys
have been married for 2 years, you can pretend like you just thought of it then. Oh, my God. You know,
Yeah. Once you've impregnated her and you're now going to share a child together.
Right.
Then you can make the joke, because then I feel like there's a sort of a biological tie that you've made.
Agreed.
You've made a biological tie.
I have made a biological tie.
How's that going for you before we dig into the...
I'm exhausted.
Great.
But hopefully he'll work that out, the whole sleeping thing that he doesn't do.
Oh,
eventually. You can hear my voice, can't you?
I can. Do you think it's because he's so full of ideas and intelligence that he just can't bring himself to stop?
I think we promised him far too much adventure, and now he's like, why would I sleep? You guys promised me all this adventure.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe there's too much stimulation in his room in terms of like intellectual things to sort of consider.
Possibly. Or he could be a serial killer.
Also that.
I hear they're just born that way.
Mm-hmm. I'm not bad. I was just drawn that way.
Exactly. Have you guys covered that? Oh, you guys did cover that
episode
movie.
One.
That's right.
Check out our other podcast if you guys are looking for other podcasts. It's called Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? Yuri was a guest on it. We are doing Akira.
And Kaylin, the complainant.
Kale is the co-host of that.
Is the co-host of that show.
Akira.
You're doing
week.
Akira.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, excellent choice.
Thank you so much.
I kind of like to be there
for that. We recorded it already. I'm so sorry.
You know, I own it. I could still watch it anytime.
How many times have you seen that movie, by the way?
A lot, but not a lot recently.
It deserves rewatching is what we both decided. The conclusion of Akira is watch it again and then again so you can understand it better.
You understood it?
No, but we want to watch it again so we
can
do.
So you too, you can try it.
Do you ever understand it?
Not everything.
Okay, great.
But that generally happens with anything Japanese with me.
Okay. And you speak Japanese.
And I watched it in Japanese. I have never watched it. I mean, I've watched it in Japanese, but I always have the subtitles on. Just because there's stuff in there. Some of that stuff is too fast or too slangy or too technical. I miss a lot of stuff even though I speak Japanese.
Okay. It's a good movie, though, guys. Check it out. And check out Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?
Also, great soundtrack to that movie. I own the soundtrack and play it a lot, actually. It's still...
Better than Mad Max Fury Road?
No.
Okay.
Nothing is.
Good. Good answer.
We're trying to get Junkie XL. Yeah. Right?
We're trying to get him on the podcast, guys, after Mark Mangini said that he maybe would do that. Help us out with that.
He seems like a stand-up guy, that Mark Mangini.
He is. Junkie, though. His name is Junkie.
His name is Junkie, right.
Okay, so let's get into this 4 minutes. Do you have any other business you want to cover before we...
Probably, but I'll bring it up during the show if it comes up.
Great. We are during the show already.
I have no other business other than to talk about this 4 minutes that we just watched, which was chock full of things that are awesome.
It's funny in my head that you thought maybe we weren't recording the whole time. Like, whenever we start recording, I'll bring up some things I want to talk about.
Yuri, is that what that little red light means?
Yuri, no. Yuri, we're on air.
Copy that. Okay, so we start... At the end, we start in the final bit of this. I mean, I was amazed at how fast we got to Immortan Joe dying in this 4 minutes. I just always sort of assumed that was going to be later, and it happens almost right away in this 4 minute segment.
I had just watched it before our last episode, so I knew that this thing just gets on wheels at the very end and just cranks through. Yeah. For a 2 hour film, everything happens sooner than you'd expect in this film, which is a testament to good filmmaking and propulsive storytelling.
It is propulsive.
So what happens here, we pick up exactly where we left off. Let's just set the stage of where we're at.
Let's do it.
So Immortan Joe has a gun to toast the unknowing? Toast the knowing.
But you know, if you're talking Travis Santel, it would probably
toast
be toast the unknowing.
In my head, it's funny.
But again, you remembered her name, which is a bonus. You're on a roll.
But wait, Yuri, there's more.
Oh shit, go.
Because what happens is, we have Rictus Erectus, another character.
Another character's name who you remembered correctly.
He's in a fight with Tom Hardy in between the war rig.
I love how Rictus Erectus is Rictus Erectus. Toast the knowing is Toast the knowing, but Max is just Tom Hardy.
Yeah, that's how my brain works. I don't know his name yet. Well, he hasn't said it in the movie yet, so...
Oh, good.
He's just Tom Hardy.
So you were... This was actually... I ruined a very important sort of thematic thing you were trying to do.
Can we pretend that that's what it was?
Let's do that. Okay. You know what? I'll cut that part out later.
I like this. I like this. So Rictus and Tom Hardy are in a fight. We'll get to the details of that in a little bit. Nux is driving the war rig with a couple of the wives in the cab with him. Mm-hmm. He's got Capable. Mm-hmm. He's got the Dag.
Mm-hmm. Your favorite, the Dag.
The best.
Nux's favorite, Capable, and your favorite,
my Dag. My favorite, the Dag. And in the car ahead of us, who else is... Is there another wife in the...
There's the one you got last time, who's now in the back of...
No, she's now coming... I'm getting to her.
Oh, sorry. In the Warwick. So you sit in the Warwick.
Is that it? Because there's some Vovellini.
Right.
Old Boney's in the passenger seat still.
Still just barely hanging on.
Up ahead, Charlize Theron is about to levy an enormous attack on a Immortan Joe, but when this sequence starts, she is back with Cheeto at the back of the...
The Giga Horse.
Giga Horse. Have I accounted for everybody?
I'm just impressed at how many names you rattled off. Like, it's like...
Great.
It's like you've been doing a podcast about this movie, and we've been watching the last year.
You know what honestly happened, man? Is I was so embarrassed by when episode 40... 40 weeks, 40 hours of material I generated about a film and didn't know half the characters' names. It made me feel bad. I'd also like to say that Old Boney's name is Keeper of the Seeds, just because I fucking can. Just because I fucking can.
I would like to believe that before you came here today, you were sitting out in your car and you've got all the names on a little note, on your little notepad in your... I was going to say in your phone, but just the physical notepad that you keep in your back pocket all the time, that you review those before you come.
Two questions for you.
Okay.
One, have you ever met me?
Nope.
Two, if you had met me, would that be something I would ever do?
Yeah.
Prepare for a podcast.
Yeah, no, I know.
I feel great, though. I feel great about it. So that's the stage set, and let's launch into some action.
Let's launch into some action.
Unless I've missed anything character-wise you think is important to discuss. Oh, and Immortan Joe driving the Giga Horse.
Right. So I think one of the first action beats that happens in this is, one of the Vivellini who's on the back. Tom Hardy, and Rictus Erectus are fighting. Mm-hmm. And she shoots at Rictus and hits him in his backpack.
Yes. His backpack, which has compressed air.
So maybe that thing that he wears over his face is some
oxygen.
Sort of oxygen type thing. It gives him a little one up because the air here is terrible.
That's kind of what I think too. I think it's got to be something with his mask. Although he's taking his mask off at this point, right?
Yeah, I don't know what that stuff is.
Anyway,
what it's for.
It's Rictus.
It's badass. It's Rictus. It looks great. Slight tangent to the Mad Max video game, which shares a world with Fury Road, and which we will do an episode about because it does share a world. Rictus's brother
not little brother,
but a brother you don't meet in this film, but who exists in the video game, is also a giant guy who has sort of like giant sort of exhaust things on his shoulders and is very impressive and has an amazing codpiece. And I will tell a story about that codpiece.
Better or worse than David Bowie in Labyrinth?
Even more glorious.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's some good codpiece.
Yeah, I'll keep that anecdote for when we're talking about the video game.
Great, don't forget it.
I won't. But so he gets shot in the back by a shotgun Vivellini on the back of the war rig.
When that happens,
turns
he
around.
Looks confused.
He does.
What noise do you think he makes? Is he Scooby Doo?
He is. He's like a big dog. Well, think about it. He is like a big Labrador Retriever.
Yeah,
Dad,
you're right.
Dad,
oh,
throw the ball. Dad.
Yeah, I'm with you, actually.
Since we're going with the whole fucking Mark Mangini's revelation that the, and Taylor on Twitter, I know you commented on this when I was looking earlier, but his revelation that the war rig is the white whale and Immortan Joe is Ahab and like all of that was just blow, and the harpoons that,
great,
blowing my mind, which is why it's kind of amazing. Now, in looking at this segment, that the harpoon is used to, or a harpoon, mm-hmm. not one of the explosive, not one of the bang sticks or whatever they call them.
I call them boom sticks because
boom,
of...
Boom. Boom, Evil Boom Dead. Is much better than bang. But,
it's just Evil Dead.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Because our audience probably has crossover with the Evil Dead, I would guess.
Right.
Okay.
I would hope so.
I would expect so.
I would be honored if. But one of the more like one of the harpoons that looks like they were firing at the back of the war rig to slow it down, is yeah. I mean, fucking it's Moby Dick.
It's awesome.
So yeah, he turns around and for a moment forgets about Tom Hardy. Thankfully for Tom Hardy, because what it allows Tom Hardy to do is, I think, isn't this is to grab one of the things off of his back that was just shot, to rip it from his back as he's turned around, and bludgeon him into submission.
This is another great phrase, exactly what happens. This is one of those moments where the score really just... here's what they've done, man. They've earned the right to do this. By having this amazing score, this amazing sound design, they never exploit it in an aggressive way. This is the climax of the film, the action climax of the film, right here. They're beating the two big bosses, and Morton Joe and Rictus Erectus are our two ostensible big bosses at the end of the level they have to beat. And the score, every time Max hits Rictus Erectus in the face with this, like, it's like a CO2 canister, but like a giant one, basically.
Yeah.
And he palms it, and he smacks him on the head, and every time he hits him, the score goes, gong, gong. And it's so just, awesome. Everything unifies in these hits to make you feel them. It's the score, it's the sound design, it's all working as this one sort of like weighty beat to just knock him in his dumb fucking head.
Until he is literally on the ground.
Yeah.
And at that moment, we don't know if he's dead, unconscious, whatever.
He's fetalized.
He is fetalized.
Max fetalizes Rictus. What gross?
What a horrible thing to say.
Sorry. That's what happened.
And yet, because we know the context is totally on point.
Yeah. This is a podcast where we try to make up new words and sentences.
That'll make you cringe.
Yuri Road. He pounds him hard and leaves him. By the way, this is happening intercut concurrently with the stuff we're about to talk about up in the Giga Horse.
Right. Do you want to take that?
Yeah, sure. So it starts off, remember Charlize Theron was in a fight with the guy who hissed at her.
Wiz. The sort of the Wiz.
Throwback, the nod to
Wiz. Of which there is another one in this one as well.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Okay, well, you have to point that out.
Yeah,
But she's fighting that guy, and when this sequence starts, she is dislodged from the Giga Horse and is and falls off the left side of it. Mm-hmm. The port side
she's,
of it.
Right, she's sort of hanging on.
Yeah, and her arm is still on at this point, which is important.
Yep.
She looks like she's in pretty bad peril. So while Rictus is attacking Tom Hardy, is when Charlize Theron falls off the back of the Gig Horse, just at the top of the sequence. Which, again, let's keep in mind, the whole movie tracks the peril of Charlize Theron and Tom Hardy concurrently. It's like when he pulls the thing out of his body, she pulls the dart out of her body. When he's in danger, she's in danger. When she is now safe, he is now safe. So we have this the whole film. And it even mirrors exact shots, which we've talked about maybe 25 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget it because it mirrored it precisely. Yeah. And I thought, oh, this movie's doing something with those characters.
Right.
They're tying them visually so we subconsciously at least get it. And let me just sidebar this and say that our conversation with Mark Mangini made me realize the power of unconscious storytelling really on display here.
Yep.
There's so many things that we've sort of begun to understand by talking through this over and over again that you cannot possibly get on a first viewing. And yet, intuitively, I think you and I both did, or got some.
I think that's why we were so affected.
Yeah, and I would argue that most people who watch it have some degree of subconscious enjoyment and affection for the detail and character details expressed in this film.
Yes.
You concur?
I concur.
That's fantastic.
Wholeheartedly. Okay. You know how sometimes I go, yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. That means no.
Right. Uh-huh. I fully concur with you on this.
Say yes like you mean it.
Yes! Yes! That's cool. Yes!
Yeah. I'm
Sir Ben Kingsley from Sexy Beast.
Yeah.
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes! 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 Yes!
I buy it. I believe you so much right now.
I figured.
You guys, you should have seen the...
I'm an actor!
You should have seen the commitment on his face, too. Really bought it.
Yeah.
You look so tired now. That exhausted you.
Totally. I have so little to give these days. I think I think you might need to take the rest of
it. It's so funny because you were like so, for a second, engaged and awake. And the second you finished your bit, you looked like you were dying.
I also have not had coffee.
Oh, buddy. Why are you not on coffee right now?
It messes with my voice, so when I'm working, I can't.
Smart. For those of you joining us this week, Yuri is a professional voiceover artist, and he's very, very good at it.
So they're both in peril.
Right. We've tracked the idea that Max gets out of peril.
Right.
As he goes through his bludgeoning of Rictus and his fetalizing of him.
Right.
And what happens with Charlize Theron? It's kind of the climax of the film here.
In many ways. She is crawling along the side of the Giga Horse. She's barely hanging on. I don't know. I didn't track where she gets the harpoon.
I don't either. But it's in her claw hand, right?
But it's in... Yes, it is.
Because that gets ripped off here.
Correct.
Yes. So I've always assumed it's the claw hand.
Yes.
That she holds the harpoon with.
Yeah.
Also...
But right before this... Yes. Sorry, go ahead. What were you
going to say? When you get to a certain point, I think you'll know which one. I want to talk about that.
Okay. I think I may be... I have to ask you, if there was a part of you that rejoiced or felt bad when Immortan Joe punches Toast in the face.
Well, hits her with a gun.
Okay, hits her with the gun in the face.
I want to say, let's track, you know what we've done the last 4 or 5 weeks with action sequences is just track through one piece at a time and not worry about the intercutting. I think that's been smart.
So yeah, let me track because through. There's no way you can, I can't remember all of Margaret Sixel's beautiful.
But we're doing a good job, I think, of just tracking through the action and talking about it.
We get through it.
Yeah. And by the way, listeners, this isn't just to summarize the film for you. We talk through it because... That's when things come up. Exactly. So don't think we're being lazy.
Right. You can always go back and watch the movie. Like, you need an excuse to go back and watch the movie again.
Yes.
To make sure that, that things are actually happening in somewhat in the way that we did.
Yeah, so, and we just make sure...
It happens so much better when you actually watch the movie.
So, what happens here with the Zoe Kravitz beat?
Right.
She is riding shotgun, held captive by Immortan Joe.
Previously,
gun on her, previously captured by the Polecats, scooped out of the war rig, handed up by Rictus Erectus to the Giga Horse. So, when Charlize Theron is going to attack Immortan Joe, and they start to battle a little bit, which Yuri's going to go into greater detail on that in just a moment, Zoe Kravitz reaches over to try to help Charlize Theron. You don't fight her. I'll help you out, Furiosa. Furiosa.
Good. Well done.
Thank you. And he, in response, takes the gun in his right hand and pistol whips her, basically, across the face. Mm-hmm. And blood flies out of her mouth. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself here, Yuri, I really feel bad for her.
Bless your heart. I think this redeems you.
Well, wait. I'm not going to stop there.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yuri looks really disappointed.
I should have known.
Yuri looks really disappointed. I feel legitimately sad for her. It's shot in a way that's good. I think well acted, well delivered.
Oh,
takes a punch really well.
Yeah.
Great. No issues. Okay. I feel like, my heart goes out to you, Toast the Knowing. Mm-hmm. I feel like you have... gotten hit in the face by a pistol, that sucks for you, by your sex captor.
Right.
Terrible situation to be in all around, by all accounts. And then some things happen to Immortan Joe, which Yuri will explain to you in a second, and then she has to take over the wheel of the war rig.
Right.
So Toast the Knowing starts to drive the war rig because Immortan Joe gets incapacitated.
Right.
And then she does this really, I know it's in the script, but I fucking hate this performance. She spits in his face,
spits on him.
On him?
Yeah.
I lost all the bonhomie and goodwill I'd raised by feeling bad for her upon getting pistol whipped. It fled my body on seeing that spitting scene.
But I noticed that you attributed all those things, you know, all the good things and all the things about actually feeling bad and the things that worked, you attributed to Toast. And not Zoe Kravitz.
Fair.
And then when this, you know, when she spits on him, you attribute that to Zoe. Yeah. As opposed to, you know, possibly, you know, the directing or the writing, which probably said here, you know, spit on him.
You know what I don't mind? I don't mind spitting on him. And I try my best
because
to separate
you liked
scripts.
It, because you liked it when the DAG, although you always, I think even then we said it was awkward where she kicks the thing on the way out.
Yeah, it is.
Back in the, earlier in the
just
film.
Just a bad take.
Kicks the chastity
belt. It's a good
belt.
Idea, but yeah, I did, you know what, I did come after the DAG on that one because I think it's a bum beat.
Right.
But I don't
That's
think...
just, you're just saying that because you like her bum.
I do. What accent was that? Let's play a game. Let's play a game called What Accent Was That?
That was Dick Van Dyke from Mary Poppins.
Oh, you got it! so, The spitting doesn't bother me in and of itself. It's a little performance beat that I don't really like because I get there needs to be a moment where one of the wives has a moment with Immortan Joe's dead body and expresses revulsion. Mm-hmm. On a story level, I understand the need for that. Mm-hmm. And I think spitting, because our hands are occupied, is probably the best option. And I think Tosa Knowing has, you know, been played as a character who doesn't really break down, who's a pretty tough character, mm-hmm. who tries to load guns, tries to do things. We've mm-hmm. tracked that character as one who wouldn't have a nervous breakdown and pound his body with her fist.
Sure.
She's got a mission.
And
she's
we don't have time for that.
No, and she's got to drive the car and shit. She's got stuff to do. Spitting, I feel like, is the right move. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they've talked through other options. The beat is, wife expresses revulsion and contempt for the dead body of Immortan Joe. That's the beat. They use spitting to do it. Fine. It just sucks, though. Like, I just don't think it's that good. And I want it to be good.
Okay.
And that's a... Yuri disagrees with me. Yes. Or okay.
That's true. That's the unconscious or the subconscious response. But I do agree with you. I do.
You do. You
I
think
do.
You, does that,
do.
That be kind
it
of bummed
it
you
didn't
out?
It didn't bother me as much as it bothered you.
But when I say
which is
it,
why you
go,
got that response from me.
I see. Okay.
But I do agree.
Okay. Good.
I do agree.
So you don't like Zoe Kravitz either?
See, now you just made it into something else.
But answer the question, Yuri.
But no, she's not my favorite wife.
Who's your favorite wife?
I think, you know, Cheeto is only my favorite wife because I found her so hot in Gods of Egypt, but that doesn't count.
I thought the dag was in Gods of Egypt.
They both
They're
are.
Both in it?
Right!
Multiple
Why haven't
wives?
You seen this?
Because it's Gods of Egypt.
Point taken.
I think capable
but I think
might
but
be
I think capable
wife.
Is yeah. Is my favorite.
I think capable is my favorite too.
Yeah.
It just
wait over the dag.
Yeah, because ultimately, like, I have a quirky affection.
Well, then
for
I'm
going to
choose the dag.
Okay, good.
Because she's crazy, and I find her the most interesting to watch.
Agreed. Well, we agree perfectly. I just think from a narrative sense.
Here's what we've done. We've discussed what happens right after Immortan Joe is killed, and we haven't gone through that.
Get
whole...
Get to it.
So let's do that. Furiosa is crawling along the... She says something which is, you know, which I hadn't really paid attention to as much as this time when we were watching it. She says something which is echoed many times throughout George Miller's canon of Road Warrior films, but is no more on display or present than in his first film, Mad Max, which is all about remembering me. Leaving your history behind.
Love what you're saying.
And memory. You know, it's a remember him as you look at the night sky, the Knight Rider. It's all about, you know, leaving something behind. Mm-hmm. And almost out of place here. Almost it's in the right place because it's a George Miller Mad Max film. But we have not established Furiosa as she wants redemption, but she's never said anything about wanting to be remembered or wanting to leave something behind. So it's almost out of place, and yet it is a beautiful moment. And she says to Immortan Joe, remember me. Now, luckily, he only has to remember her for about a second before she takes the harpoon and she hooks it into his whole oxygen system, the thing that has signified him throughout the film, these tubes and the teeth and the mask. And then throws the other end of the harpoon, the chain, into the wheels of the Giga Horse, and it rips the bottom half of his head off, the bottom half of his face off.
It is fucking gross.
It is gross.
And
awesome.
I want to say two things. One, I'm gonna propose an idea to you that you can veto.
Okay.
The idea is that for the first time in our podcast history, we go back and freeze frame the scene of his jaw coming off. Because I feel like it happens so fast. I feel like there's a frame that we've never seen.
Okay.
And maybe it's worth discussing. Are you into that?
I'm into that.
Okay.
Do you want to keep talking?
Yes. Okay. Secondly, I want to add to the remember me moment.
Yes.
Because I think it's everything you said, I think brilliantly said and absolutely very, very smartly sort of picked out. But also I think that it is a subversion. Oh, we have so much fucking ground left to cover. Holy shit.
Yeah, I know.
We haven't covered any of this shit.
I know.
Okay. Okay,
wait,
sorry guys.
That's distracted. Okay. You can listen.
Yeah, just listen how awesome this is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good, you
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, no,
that is, shot too of her climbing outside the window. I love that scene.
Yeah, harpoon, okay, slow motion. Gun out.
Here comes. Toast the boy just got rocked.
Okay.
Here, this actually. Oh, he growls.
And he growls. They do that. That's a Mark Mangini special right there. You know it is.
I think her arm must have come off right. Oh, it's
nope,
so
not yet.
Oh,
that's there gross!
It is. That was a shot. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's gross!
I knew it.
Oh, and there's like stuff. Spit when she's. Will you take a picture
so
of this?
Good.
Where, you know what? I know we usually just post photos of where we ended, but this is so good. Yeah. And there's literally spittle from his
face. Wait, go back to where there's one frame in his face.
I'm going to.
And I love that they spent the money to make this. Oh, shit!
It's so
my god, you guys.
Okay.
You gotta watch it in slow motion.
Okay, there it is. It starts to come off.
Oh, look at it.
She's just looking right into it.
Oh, guys, this is...
Oh my god!
There it is!
Okay,
I'm taking a picture of that.
Okay, take a picture of that.
You guys, you don't understand. It's so good. His jaw comes off. They spent the money to do this, but don't linger on it, which is fucking amazing.
Yeah, it's, as a matter of fact, it's actually very quick.
I mean, that's the thing. I've never seen this. I just knew it was there. Oh, this is a sharper version of it. Go back. There's actually an in-focus.
Okay. Oh, shit.
There's an in-focus version of this shot that I want to see. Oh, fuck, it's gross. And watch it in reverse, you guys.
Nah, sorry. This is me not...
Is there a
slow motion? This is me
with a PS4. You guys, it's so...
I mean, that's pretty good, too.
That's pretty good. I'll take that shot, too.
Okay.
You guys, this is... I mean, let's be honest. Fucking gross. That's the
there
shot.
It is. There it is.
That's
there the it is. There it is. We got it. Getting close.
Oh, my God.
We got it.
This is so...
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah, just to forget the rest of the... Yeah, just get on...
Okay. Guys, we did this for you so you don't have to. His tongue is out. His... What is that? His fucking larynx poking out?
The windpipe gets his tongue, the teeth, everything.
It is the grossest.
I'm going to leave it right there.
I'm so happy that we did that.
Me too.
Listen, that's really good.
That was probably a lot more fun for us than it was for you listeners, but
guess what you have
coming? But go to @youareawaited and you'll get to see...
Go to the Twitter account, you'll see some bitching stuff. What I want to talk about is...
Yes.
Remember Me. And okay. I'm happy I got the chance to see it again just to make sure I remembered it right. But it does two things. It does all the things that you said just now, mm-hmm. but it also does something else, which is something this movie does constantly, which is a subversion of a classic movie trope. There's the bad guy, mm-hmm. or the good guy. When the good guy
right.
comes back to fight the bad guy at the end,
right.
you have that Remember Me moment.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's
yeah.
this moment. It's this moment yeah. structurally, it's this moment verbally, and yet, because it's a George Miller universe moment, it does all of things. And because there's a Witness Me theme throughout this, so I just want to be remembered.
But it is very different. But yeah, keep going. It is clearly... She could have said that, and it would have been cool in a way that she's subverting the thing that they've used the whole time.
Yeah.
But they chose specifically Remember Me.
Yeah, it's great. It's a line we've seen in 10 other action films over the years. Never in this way, because in this one it has echoes, thematic echoes, that actually make sense. They aren't just like, Remember Me? Bang, 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 bang.
Right.
It's like... There's a whole metaphor to that. That's really
although beautiful. Although no, it's a classic kind of line that you would hear delivered this way. Remember Me.
Yeah.
That would it's was a classic he, like Schwarzenegger
he,
line.
It was I got what you're doing.
Right,
was
yeah.
he vomiting at the top of that?
Yes, that's how I get into my Schwarzenegger. Sally, remember when I said I'd kill you last?
You're
I lied.
Professional voiceover artist.
Yeah, but not a professional impressionist, as it was
Damn
just
it.
Evidenced.
Damn I know. It. Anyway, by the way, this freeze frame is really fucking me up.
Do you want me to...
No, I want to leave
you
it.
Leave
I can't
it
stop staring at it. Anyway, she pulls his face
Do you think
off.
This is all CG? Or do you think this is... clearly some of it is. To get it to do
it
what you want.
CG.
But there's... Yeah.
But they
you know what,
the fact is they spend the time
care.
To do
don't
this.
Don't care, and they don't linger on it, so it doesn't really matter.
No, but it's also fucking awesome. His nose gets ripped off. You see his nose cavity?
Ah, it's fucked up.
It's really fucked up. It couldn't have felt good.
And it's an interesting way to have... Let's talk about... Because she could have killed him any number of different
I
ways.
Talk about
this is a very specific... Yeah, go. Yeah.
No. I launch into what you're going to say, but
Well, you
I,
would say there were two things. I want to make sure that we...
That was the two things.
Okay. This is a very specific way to... She could have done... Also, she could have shot him in the face. She could have stabbed him with the harpoon and pulled his body out. But it is specifically... Have you ever seen a death like this in a film where you get the lower jaw ripped off?
No.
Me neither. I wonder if it has to do with the removal of that mask that made him what he was, to take away his, and now I'm really sort of digging and
you're,
probably stretching,
no, you're
removing
the,
his voice.
I agree.
Removing all of the, I mean, it, because I think it would have been too on the nose if she had like ripped his balls off with the,
well,
because the emasculation thing would have been the wrong.
I would say go back to what you said first. I think it's the voice is part of it, but I think they've literally unmasked their god.
Great.
They've showed him
great.
As a human being. I think that's what
great.
It is, right?
Yes.
They've said, you know what? You're an imposter. You're not a god. You're a man. They remove
men
his
bleed.
Mask. And he exactly. And
right.
he dies.
He has not bled. You know, back to the man who would be king, if I've brought that up at all
you have.
Before. Okay, yeah.
yeah.
You know, they've probably never seen their god bleed. He's constantly hiding himself behind, you know, these things that, you know, so he, you can't see that he's diseased and that
yep.
he's dying. And this is the...
It's a little bit of Wizard of Oz. It's
yeah.
a guy who's been hiding behind the curtain for the whole time and directing mm-hmm. people from afar and giving, you know, orders mm-hmm. to people who go off and sort of do it for him. Here he leads from the front the whole movie, but still in his costume.
Yeah.
In his guise of overlord and god. And she unmasks him and shows him for what he is, which is, mm-hmm. I can tell you right now, guys, a gross thing.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at it. You can see his cheeks, the skin of his cheeks come off.
Now, what if she had done the thing with the harpoon and had just pulled his mask off and he had shot her in the head?
I don't know. I guess
it would not. It would not have
good.
Been satisfying.
Yeah, I think. But I think the other things are right. You're right. They took away his voice. They took
yeah.
away his mouth. You know,
yeah.
his ability to control the people.
Yeah,
is gone. And I do think you're right that emasculating his balls feels too on the nose.
Mm-hmm. But I love it. She hooks the she sets the harpoon there very specifically, and then she throws the chain in the wheels, and. You're right, it pulls her arm off, doesn't it? She sacrifices her arm in the process.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong. I'm not sure where she loses it, but I know in the scene after this, she doesn't have an arm.
Right.
So her
right.
mechanical arm somehow
so it probably gets also sucked under the wheel.
That's
it's
what
gotta be. Yeah, she sacrifices it.
Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah, great. So
she's great.
Tom Hardy runs up and she is so while that's happening, Tom Hardy has finished beating the fuck out of Rictus Erectus.
Right.
He runs up and basically as she collapses, grabs her. They're laying on the back of the Giga Horse now.
Right. Well, first, and then who calls out? Is it...
Cheeto.
Is it Cheeto? Yeah, he's dead.
Yep, Cheeto calls out.
And in a great score moment, in a great choice, the music almost completely drops out. The music that has been, you know, on top of us the whole time and driving everything stops. Mm-hmm. Almost as if there's a moment of silence to honor what has just happened.
And it's not just that. I think that music cue is motivated by Nux because the camera lands on Nux and the one person here
right.
who has a morally conflicted reaction to Immortan Joe dying would be Nux.
Right.
He's the one person involved in all this fight
mm-hmm.
that up until a day ago, Immortan mm-hmm. Joe was his god. All he wanted to do was please Immortan Joe.
Mm-hmm.
That god has now died in front of him.
Yeah.
And it's a conflicted moment for him. And the score drops out, but it's a POV, I would argue, moment of mm-hmm. score dropping out. It's a moment of silence for Immortan Joe, but it's also, fuck, Nux is like, oh.
His whole, yeah.
I don't know how I feel
about
that.
His whole belief system, yeah.
Yeah, his god just got killed in front of him.
Right.
Which is a crazy thing for anyone to
Which
have.
Which is happen. The last thing he needed, I think, to see to complete his journey
Absolutely
to his
right.
growth.
They say that for writers, you can never write your first great book until your parents die. Because you could say all the things that you weren't able to say.
Because you're afraid they're going to read it.
Correct. And I think in a way, like, there's an echo of that here, where his there's nothing else now that he needs to complete his transformation to sort of secular hero, away from obsequious, mm-hmm. You know, follower, believer. I guess
right.
believer is a better word. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a sort of a believer the whole movie, mm-hmm. and this is the final tie that's severed. All he has now is his friends. All he has now
yeah.
is himself.
Yeah.
And possibly the legacy of being left behind, although he doesn't expect to go to Valhalla anymore.
Right.
Which will come up in a second, which is really, right. really important. So all of his, I would
we
argue
get
here,
all that. Holy shit, we still have
know,
to
know,
cover
I
that?
I know, sorry. So there's...
No, go. We'll
it's a big episode,
guys. Talk till we're done.
There is this we've talked about this before on previous episodes, but this is a march of Nux going from devout believer to basically secular humanist. It's he, a guy getting rid of religion and mm-hmm. coming to be a humanist over
mm-hmm.
the course of the film. And I think that this is the almost last step of that for him. We'll get to, I think, the last step in a second. It's in this sequence.
Right.
So anyway, so that happens.
Right.
And then, almost without talking, mm-hmm. they understand that because they can't get the war rig ahead of the Giga Horse,
right.
all the wives have to go from the war rig to the Gigahorse.
To the Gigahorse, right.
So that starts to happen. So Cheeto calls him over. He's dead. They have the moment with Nux. And then starts to crawl out.
Right. And they all start transferring everyone from the war rig to the Gigahorse.
Just to set the stage, Toast is driving the
right. She's sort of sitting in the passenger seat, but steering,
and his foot's on the gas, so she can't get to it, I assume.
Well, no, because she has to, because it comes off the gas when he dies, and she has to punch it.
You're so and then Nux is driving the war rig, and he's basically butted the nose of the war rig up against the back of the Gigahorse, and letting the wives and everyone else sort of go across to the Gigahorse.
Little bridge.
It's one Vavolini is left.
One that I can remember right now.
I think it's one.
Yeah, I think it's just one.
And there's this beautiful moment as the dad gets out and she gets on the hood of the war rig and she looks back at old Boney, who is now dead. But she's got a beautiful smile on her face. She's still got her eyes open.
Yeah. She's just barely hanging on. She's already in her happy place.
And you know what I fucking love about this moment?
Tell me.
Is that the dad reaches in and takes the seeds from her.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So smart.
Because they have created a relationship between those two.
And it's hope.
In the very little time. Yeah.
She takes the hope.
Even
though you're dead, I'm gonna let this live on for you. It's a way of the old Boney never dying, I think. It's just like perpetual life. I got you. I'm gonna carry your mission forward even though you're dead. And it's, I think, glorious.
And then she memorializes her. She looks at her through the windshield and she just puts her hand on the windshield. Which is also interesting. Because they could have chosen to have her do the same thing the Vavolini do, which is they sort of reach out and grab the air and bring it to their heart. Mm-hmm. But she's not a Vavolini.
No, the dad's also crazy as fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
She hasn't been paying attention.
But it is a grounded, very tender moment.
It's great
for the dad.
I absolutely love it.
Before then, she runs off to the Gigahorse.
Not to be misogynistic about this, but she scampers gracefully and beautifully.
She does.
She looks great as she goes to the Gigahorse.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful moment for her.
That's what you get for hiring models. They know how to move.
She moves like a gazelle.
Like a crazy gazelle.
You've described my perfect woman. A crazy gazelle is my perfect woman. I'm not lying to you.
We will find you a crazy gazelle, my friend.
God bless America. And so leave old Boney behind, and Capable is the last to go. She looks down at Nux, and he says, once I know you're safe, I'm gonna jam the pedal and I'll come with you.
Yeah.
And she knows he's lying.
Right. She looks at him and she knows.
Yeah, she knows. And then
you think he knows too.
I think he knows too.
Yeah.
Although I think maybe he hopes, but I think he probably knows.
Yeah.
So much left to cover.
Yeah, another moment where, you know, it's not over drama, you know, I mean, it's not overwrought or anything. She looks at him. There's almost no facial expression, and yet we know it's that she knows that he's lying. Yeah.
So she goes off.
There's no time for words. She moves on.
As she does, Rictus wakes up from his fetal position.
Well, that's sort of the Wes moment for me. It's where they think that they've, you know, from Road Warrior, where they think he's gone under the thing, and then he pops up, you know.
Oh, yeah,
because we've sort of forgotten about him.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff has happened after he got knocked out.
You're right.
It's once again, you know, Mr. Orange. We forget about him.
Yep.
And then he becomes a threat.
Big threat.
Again, big threat.
So he runs up, chasing after Capable, and right before he grabs her, Nux slams on the brakes, separating the two vehicles.
Exactly.
And boy, does Rictus look confused by this.
Confused and upset.
Just doesn't know what to make of it.
As a matter of fact, he gets so upset.
Wait a second, in a second.
Okay.
So he's confused by this.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nux floors it again, ramming this thing up again. This really confuses Rictus.
Right.
He's like, you just slowed down, now you're speeding up again.
Yeah.
The noise I expect he'd imagine is,
That's exact, yeah.
Like, what are you doing?
Right. Mark Mangini, why didn't you? You could have done that.
Take that. I'll clip that out and send it to you, Mark, if you want to use it for a future film.
That's for free.
Indiana Jones 5. And then...
Right. And then he gets so angry that he starts shouting his own name.
I love this.
Rictus! He's got nothing left.
I love that he shouts his own name.
He shouts his own name as a battle cry.
Yeah.
And literally starts to tear that supercharger, which I think I'm getting that right.
Good for you.
If Christian
described
it to me correctly via email, tears the super, like, literally, and like fire and everything. You know, I mean, he's literally destroying he's just so mad.
Why does he do that?
I think
because
I think it's all he's got.
Here's the thing. Nux had just given him what he wanted, which is to abut the Giga Horse right. again.
But if he had made a move, he would have slammed on the
brakes
again.
So maybe he's just like, stop fucking with me! My dad always did that! What percent of his lines are either dad or rictus in this movie?
95%.
Amazing.
Because, yeah, and then his other line is, he was perfect in every way.
Yeah,
great. I had a baby brother. He's
and then
perfect
just,
in every way.
Just dad, rictus.
Dad, rictus.
Fantastic. What a fucking thing. Right.
I know.
Anyway, so yeah, so now all the wives are looking back. They have, three of the, it's Dag, Cheeto, and Capable. Look at me go mm-hmm. with the names. They're on the back of the mm-hmm. Giga Horse looking back
right.
at Nux driving.
Right. There's a beautiful sort of dolly into Cheeto, dolly into, faces filling the frame, Nux.
And we see the arch coming up.
The arch coming up. Yeah, we get sort of, they do a flyover, sort of the camera flyover. So you see the doof wagon is right on the ass of the war rig. Like, right there is no room.
Along with the whole Carmada behind them.
Yeah.
Like, they're just coming after them. They're just ready. The second everyone gets through that pass, it's mm-hmm. over for the wives.
Yeah.
It's over.
Like, yeah.
They're gonna catch up to them in the wide open plain, which we know is on the other side.
Right.
By the way, that's an argument for them going back in terms of a plot thing, is that it gives us a sense of geography. The movie doesn't have to spend time expositing the geography. Because mm-hmm. we know without being told that if all the cars get through that arch, the wives are done for.
Right.
And we don't have to be told that because we've seen what's on the other side. And we can think about and extrapolate. Mm-hmm. It's a very smart story.
Also going back to when we were discussing the Jamuska Moto Goats before and them blowing the cavern mm-hmm. or the canyon to block it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been cleared.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not the end of that passageway.
Right. Oh,
it's just
great.
It's
that
just
answered
a
our question. You're right.
Totally it is just
right.
a
excellent callback.
Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, good. That was good.
There you go.
You really have a steel trap brain.
No, well, only because we're watching this and I would not have thought of that had we not just watched the 4 minutes.
But listen, really good.
Okay, thank you. I am really bad at taking compliments.
Here it is.
Yeah. High five.
So this is all happening. So,
right.
And they look back at Nux, and Nux, this seems like a moment you would want us to talk about.
Let's talk about it, because I cried again.
Yeah, it's great.
Even today when I watched it. This gets me every time.
I get chills. It's great.
He points right at... Well, them, but you know, capable.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. And he doesn't yell it out, and suddenly it means something very different than anybody else who has called it out from the rest of the film. And he says, witness me.
It's so good. It's the score is right, the shot is right, the performance is, I would say, exquisite.
1,000%.
It's so good. And it's the final moment of his transformation where he doesn't need to be witnessed by other war boys. He doesn't need to be witnessed by his God. He needs to be witnessed by the woman he loves, who mm-hmm. knows and understands what he's doing is giving his own life to save hers. Mm-hmm. And it's fucking beautiful. It's such smart storytelling.
It really is.
It just comes full circle in a perfect way mm-hmm. that you can't do any other way. And it just earns that emotional moment. I mean, as an emotional climax of the film, mm-hmm. it's perfect.
Yeah.
We have another climax mm-hmm. coming up in the next sequence, But this is,
if we're looking, and when we have this entire time, Nux being the emotional core of this film, it is exactly right.
It's so good, man. It's so fucking good.
So fucking good.
And then he
rolls the truck.
Yeah, he rolls the truck. He takes it. The music swells. He wrenches
with
it.
Fucking Rictus still holding the thing above his head with the fire, and then he falls under the truck. And
there's this beautiful shot, too, before he flips it, where the camera pans back, or pulls back a little bit from him, and we see the reflection of the flames against the windshield of the war rig, just kind of almost obscuring and highlighting Nux's face. It's this beautiful fiery death, you know, mm-hmm. which is this beautiful death that he always hoped for. It's got fire and it's got, you know, it is objectively beautiful. Then he wrenches the truck. Rick, do you see Rictus go flying off?
Yeah, under the, he falls under the, yeah.
And the war rig tumps over onto him, smashing him.
Yeah.
And then we get, thank God we did the Mark Mangini episode before this.
Right.
Because we get to hear these slowed down animal growls.
Yeah.
Fucking awesome.
Yep. Go back and listen to it again, kids.
Guys, I'm not joking. We say this a lot in episodes. Go back and watch that fucking car crash.
Because
it is, in its totality, incredible.
Also, a huge, and then of course the doof wagon, you know, right behind it crashes right into it. But There's a moment of, and there's a bit here that is a huge amount of restraint and an attention to reality that you never see in movies. Mm-hmm. Any other movie would have had the war rig go up in a fiery explosion, the likes of which an exploding rig could never do on its, like, it would have been fire, explosion. The war rig does not explode.
Because there's, although there are CGI additions to this, obviously, mm-hmm. this was done mostly practical.
Yeah.
They crashed this fucking thing.
Yeah.
And the way it moves is naturalistic, the way it moves is realistic. And, I mean, it's not worth our time maybe going into all the details, but all these parts, the guitar flies at the screen on the bungees.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the worst.
You know, that's all CG stuff.
Sure.
But then it ends with the steering wheel coming to you and the symbol of
Morton Joe.
And you go into the mouth of the steering wheel, and then we cut to black.
And then there's, inside the mouth of the steering wheel, there is literally the Morton Joe's symbol, the brand.
So good.
I mean, terrible in that you could tell it was clearly for the 3D version.
Right. Yes and no. The guitar, terrible.
Yes. But the steering wheel,
I'm
not.
Okay with. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, I'm glad you agree.
No.
I think the guitar is like in Step Up 3D.
Which I saw in the theater. I think we've already established this.
Yeah, when they throw the slushy up at the screen. You're like, we just did that because of the 3D version.
Right.
So I agree with you about the guitar. I think that thematically, it almost feels like a comic book out. Like an old Batman.
Yeah.
You know, there's something about it that felt... thing, and it lets you know you're done with a Morton Joe now. We're done with that.
Yeah.
We're going to something else.
Right.
So I was okay with it.
Yeah. It's the period on that. And I was hoping then that our 4-minute alarm would go off like right there.
But no, we had a minute and 20 left, you guys. So that's where we are. Bear with us. I know we're at 50 minutes here, guys, but this is a big episode for us.
Yeah.
Also, we're happy to see each other.
We're happy to see each other, and we're trying to extend the life of this podcast. So why not talk a little longer?
Yeah, just keep. We'll get to talking.
It's organic. It's organic.
So then we cut to the Giga Horse is now going across the desert.
Right, in a beautiful sort of low angle shot of the
So nice. And
into the sunset, literally into the sunset.
Into the sunset, and then we cut to utter horrific sight, which is Charlize Theron looking like she's death.
Right, and sounding horrible. If you've never heard, a punctured lung, like, or what do they call that?
A collapsed lung.
Yeah. And her trying to breathe that horrible wheezing is, you know, again, Mark. Keep going. By all means.
Was that good?
That was good.
Did you like it?
Yeah. It was amazing to watch, folks.
I actually collapsed my lung for that.
I appreciate that. We need to sit down 911.
Very similitude.
So another... And you know, Mark Mangini mentioned it as well. You know, he said, you know, most of the dialogue in this film is ADR, was added in, you know, recorded and added in later, just because so much was going on that they probably couldn't record dialogue cleanly.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, sort of evident in this scene where it's quiet in the, you know, there's a moment of quiet, except for her horrible, horrific wheezing.
It's terrifying. And she looks fucked up, you guys.
Yeah.
She's pale, she's sweaty, she's got blood all over her, she's been wrecked.
Right.
She got blood all over her.
Luckily, there's a Vivalini there who knows, who's probably the medical Vivalini, who knows exactly what's going on.
Yep.
Because one of the wives says, why is she...
Cheeto
says, do you remember exactly what she says?
Why is she breathing?
Yeah, or why is she making that sound or something like that?
Why is she making that sound, yeah.
The Vivalini explains, but not saying, you know, collapsed lung or punctured, you know.
She does say, her lungs are collapsing.
Oh, is that okay?
Yeah, she says it.
Okay.
Her lungs are collapsing. She's trying to get air in, basically.
Right.
And
right.
Max, like a boss,
he's like, I know what to do. I've seen this shit before.
It sucks,
I've lived.
But I'm going to do it. So he takes out a very sharp knife.
Yeah.
And
which he finds.
Puts it between. Yeah. Where is it?
He just finds it among stuff on the floor. I'm sure she's got like 12,000 knives hidden around the.
Puts it between two of her ribs.
Yep.
Right where it ought to go.
And then in a beautiful, in a beautiful moment that I love every time, and every time he says it, he just says, I am so sorry.
Yeah, yeah. It is a little...
It is a little...
What's the word I want to use here? I don't want to say out of character. It's not out of character. It's almost a hyper-characterized moment.
Well, but every moment that follows, I agree with you, but every moment that follows now with him is out of character for him.
Yeah.
Because he's also been changed, much like Nux had reached his place.
Yeah.
You're right. you could argue that...
I like it.
Yeah, I love it.
I have no problem.
I love it, but you could argue that the Max that we've grown to know and love, especially in this film and The Survivalist, wouldn't have said anything. He just would have gone in and done it.
Yeah.
There wouldn't have been a moment of anything.
You're right.
But I guess it does show a change.
Absolutely right.
You know? I love the delivery is...
Quirky.
There is quirk, and because then he stabs her.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, and then he stabs her.
But immediately, and all the wives go, you know,
right.
Because it's fucking brutal. But immediately, right. She can breathe better.
Yeah,
you hear it.
Yeah, which is a thing, I guess, that is true. Yeah. I mean, that is essentially what you would do, the best thing to do in a situation like that.
Yeah,
I don't know that I could bring myself to do it. I don't know
George
exactly
Miller,
where. Yeah,
doctor,
right? Exactly.
I couldn't do it. If you, yeah. Well, I would do it to you. I'd stab you.
Or like a tracheotomy, like, you know, they always, you know, if somebody's choking and then you poke a hole in their windpipe.
I could stab you.
I would stab you.
Thank you, man.
I love you.
I love you too.
Could you just give us a second?
I didn't think you would actually stab me.
Sorry. Like, I got excited.
Like really upset that you actually stabbed me.
I got excited. I've got knives in my office too.
That was a good podcast.
That was, and then I should have just hit stop. I still can. I can always go back and. But we still had, you know. And I was thinking about it, and then I'm like, but we still have stuff to cover.
Yeah, it's covered.
So it continues with Max.
He lifts her.
Yeah.
In a very romantic, graceful.
Yeah.
Way, I would say. And she wants to say something to him.
Yeah.
And she says, "Home." Right?
I don't know what she says. I don't know whether we're meant to know what she says. Although, you know who we could ask? Paul Cantrell, who's watched it with the subtitles.
Hey, Paul, what does she say?
What does she say, Paul?
I think she says home.
Okay.
Which is beautiful.
Okay, yeah.
Because the concept of home for her is one of the driving forces. She wanted to go home the whole movie. Her home wasn't there.
Right.
And she's going back to the place that is now her home, that became her home. So for her to say home feels right to me.
Sure.
I hope that's what it is.
But
she says something else that we definitely don't hear.
Right.
And
yeah.
I think she says home again.
Maybe. And does she almost laugh? Or am I thinking of a different moment like that in another movie? Like, I love movies where somebody's dying and they say something that clearly means something only to them, like that nobody else can see.
Yeah.
Or you don't hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
And we're left to wonder what that last...
I think that's it. I don't think we're meant to hear what she says in the actual... to his ear. Because she says... I would argue she says home and tries to say something else. He lifts her closer to his head.
Right.
Her mouth is right next to his ear. She says a couple more things I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm meant to. And then she says home again, I think, as he lays her down. That's my interpretation of how that goes.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't hear that, but I'm willing to go along with that.
Yeah. What's also great is that... is Toast not part of the scene because she's still driving?
Probably.
Fantastic.
You love that part. That's your favorite part.
Yeah, fantastic.
But also in a uncharacteristic moment for Max, he's very gentle and he says, "Hey, hey."
Yeah.
Like in a very, you know, intimate way. Like, "Hey, hey, don't, you know, stop talking. Stop talking.
Yeah.
Don't use your strength. We'll get through this."
Yeah.
In a very comforting way.
And this is the
that has not been his MO. Let's be honest.
And this is the coming into the sequence I think we've talked about before where Tom Hardy gets criticized for. Because but I think that the interpretation we've heard before on this podcast, I think, is right, that he's wrestling against his natural instincts. And the reason he looks conflicted about things here, and it starts here, I would say, in this sequence, is that he doesn't quite know how to do it.
He doesn't know how to act in this situation.
Yeah. And he's wrestling. He wants to be caring and comforting and compassionate to her, doesn't necessarily know how to do that.
Yeah.
And is trying to do it. And I think that that's a beautiful moment. I don't, his performance doesn't bug me. Is all I want to say.
Me either. At all.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people find issue with it, or they say it's very Bane-y or whatever. But
I would say, fuck you, guys. Who say that?
Fuck you.
Ooh!
Fuck you.
You don't curse as much as me, and I like it when you
don't.
Do.
That's a fucking lie.
Even that sounded a little forced, buddy.
That was forced to make a point. That was forced to make a point.
I know, but that's the wrong.
That's a lie. That's it.
I think I cursed more than you on this podcast.
No.
Guys, I'm not saying life.
Will you weigh in on that? Because
honestly,
I find that hard to believe.
I would be shocked if anyone thinks Yuri curses more than me on this podcast. Let us know the answer to that, please. And we'll announce it on air.
So that's the last beat of that bit.
I think there's only one more episode of film left.
And then it goes, and then it's credits? Like, we have like 4 minutes and then it's the credits?
I think it might be. Because what is this? What is the timing on this? 152? 148?
144.
But, so wait, yeah. 146 then would be where we get to. Because this is the middle of it.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so 146.
So 150 is probably about 10 minutes of credits, maybe. So maybe one and a half episodes left.
Oh, man. Yeah, or something like that. So I've been struggling. You guys know the struggle. We want to get... Obviously, we'd like for this going forever. It's not going to do that. So I thought we got to get at least 52 episodes.
Yep.
So that we could call it, in retrospect, A Year on the Fury Road.
Oh. Beautiful. You're
on the Yuri Road.
Things.
Thank you.
Yeah, A Year on the Yuri Road.
And I was very concerned with making the last bit of the credits the last episode. And in talking to Travis about it, I have come to the conclusion, thanks to him, that we don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. That we can finish the film and then still have stuff to do. We can still have guests who have not been available yet, but hopefully will be coming available in the coming weeks. And some of the other things that we talked about wanting to cover, the video game, the comic books, the black and white, the black and chrome version.
There's a special episode coming out about that.
Yeah.
Probably
next
week.
We are going to see the premiere of that.
Oh, so the next episode will be that.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Badass. Next week, guys, you can tune in for a special black
already?
And chrome. Yeah.
Shit.
November 1st. So that you'll be hearing that next week, guys.
Wow.
A lot of good stuff coming up. Comic book, video game... Black and Chrome Edition. We should save that surprise that we're gonna do.
Yeah,
some other things.
Some other things. But know that we're here for you.
Know that we love you. Know that with us you are witnessed, and you will ride eternal and shiny and chrome on the road to Valhalla.
My name is Yuri Lowenthal.
My name is Travis Sintel.
And you are awaited.